Welcome, everyone. My name is Christian Ramers. I'm the Assistant Medical Director at the Family Health Centers of San Diego, former faculty member here at the University of Washington. I'm going to be talking today about the hepatitis C testing recommendations. So the outline of this talk is as follows. We're going to talk about the CDC HCV testing recommendations. I'll go into the rationale for the birth cohort HCV testing recommendations, which is a major part of the new testing recommendations. And then we'll finish off with the goals and the impact of the HCV birth cohort testing. So let's start out with the new HCV testing recommendations from the CDC. So by way of background, I'm going to first talk about the 1998 guidelines that the CDC issued as part of a comprehensive strategy to address hepatitis C. And these were really a risk-based strategy. So on the top half of the slide, you can see the details of who the CDC recommended that should be tested based on risk for infection. And on the bottom, the guidelines discussed who should be tested based on an actual recognized exposure. So in terms of risk for infection, the CDC recommended anybody that had injected illegal drugs, anybody that had selected medical conditions, including conditions that required receipt of clotting factor concentrates before 1987, those who had been on long-term hemodialysis because of the sheer number of percutaneous exposures that they had, and also those that had persistently abnormal ALT levels. And finally, anybody that had received a blood transfusion or an organ transplant before July of 1992, and that date was chosen because that was the date when the blood supply was felt to be clean and free of hepatitis C due to improved testing. And then secondly, if there had been a recognized exposure, such as in healthcare workers, emergency medical workers, or public safety workers, after a needle stick or a mucosal exposure to a patient or a client with known HCV-positive blood, or in children who were born to HCV-positive women, they should also have been tested. And so as you can see, it was really a selective population of patients that should have been tested based on these guidelines. And then in 2012, just recently, the CDC published these, which are the newer recommendations, and it included a major shift in who should be tested. These were not meant to replace the 1998 risk-based guidelines, but actually to supplement them. And the main buzzword here is that they introduced what's called birth cohort testing. And we'll talk about this later in the talk, but really advising primary care physicians and clinicians and other providers to test adults who were born between 1945 and 1965, or the so-called baby boomers. Specifically, these recommendations in 2012 advise that in addition to testing adults of all ages at risk of hepatitis C virus, as I already explained in the 1998 guidelines, to also test adults who were born between 1945 and 1965 without any necessary prior ascertainment of hepatitis C risk. And in addition, these guidelines provide a little bit of advice on what to do after the test is performed. And so this is a little bit of the post-test counseling piece. These guidelines suggest that everybody identified with hepatitis C infection based on this test should also receive a brief alcohol screening and intervention as clinically indicated, a referral to an appropriate care or treatment services for HCV infection. This could be either an experienced primary care provider or a specialist. And lastly, post-test counseling about reducing the risk of further transmission of hepatitis C. So I'm just going to review briefly some of the hepatitis C testing methods. And specifically, this is important because testing for hepatitis C is really a two-step process. First of all, to identify anybody that's been exposed to hepatitis C, we need to do an antibody test. And this test is highly sensitive and specific. And a reactive test indicates one of two different things. Either it's a person who has current hepatitis C infection, or in a small percentage, about 15%, they may have resolved infection and just retain a positive hepatitis C antibody. There is a very important second step in testing for hepatitis C, which involves nucleic acid testing. There are different versions of this test, both quantitative and qualitative, that can be used. And a positive test to this second step indicates active infection. And you can tell your patients that they actually do have ongoing chronic hepatitis C virus infection. So now I'm going to move on to the rationale for the birth cohort HCV testing recommendations. So going way back to the introduction of any screening test, these are criteria that were introduced by the WHO in the late 60s, and they're important factors to consider when a screening program is considered. And I've kind of paraphrased the original publication here in four main bullet points. The first point is the disease process relevant? Is the condition an important public health problem with a well-understood natural history and, most importantly, a latent phase that would allow earlier intervention? Secondly, is treating this problem feasible? Is there an effective intervention that can alter the natural history? And is the screening test available, easy to use, accurate, and acceptable to the population at risk, as well as acceptable to clinicians that are going to be ordering it? Thirdly, does early diagnosis and treatment affect outcomes? Is there an effective way that we can change the course of the disease? And then finally, especially in the modern era of medical care, screening programs are going to need to be cost effective. So is the cost of the screening program worth the investment in terms of the health benefit gained? And over the next few slides, I'm going to address a lot of these points with data that we know about hepatitis C and the hepatitis C epidemic in the United States. So this slide shows the estimated prevalence of chronic active hepatitis C in the United States. It's estimated that between 3.2 and 4.1 million people are living with chronic hepatitis C, based on the surveys that we have, which granted are limited. Now, if you're familiar with the HIV literature, this is about four times as high as the levels of HIV. And most people are unaware that this number is so high because a lot of people with hepatitis C have not been diagnosed. Another very interesting statistic here is the trends in age-adjusted mortality among three very important viruses, HIV, hepatitis C, and hepatitis B. And this is pretty shocking to a lot of people to see that in about 2006, the age-adjusted mortality of hepatitis C actually surpassed that of HIV. HIV mortality rates have been falling due to effective treatment that we have, and yet hepatitis C has been doing the opposite. The mortality rates have indeed been climbing up to 2006. And there's several reasons for that. Partially, hepatitis C is much more of a latent virus that causes disease and inflammation in the liver over a long period of time. And the untoward health effects from hepatitis C really take a long time to take effect. A lot of people in the United States were infected in the 70s and 80s, and so those patients are just now beginning to experience the consequences of hepatitis C virus infection. And so if you take these numbers and extrapolate them into the future, this study by Ryan et al. In 2011 shows that the forecasted mortality from 2010 to 2060 is overwhelming. This is going to keep on going. And so people with hepatitis C, the mortality will peak, it looks like, around the year 2030 or so. Really, this is a very important time in the epidemic of hepatitis C that we have a very large wave of mortality that's coming in the future if we do nothing to address it. And finally, the study estimated that without treatment, an estimated 1,071,229 people will have died from hepatitis C by the year 2060. Another aspect that's really important in the Hep C epidemic is that it's estimated that about half of people are aware of their infection. These numbers are very soft. There's only been a limited number of studies, mostly because there are so many people that do not know about their hepatitis C virus infection. So unlike HIV, where we think about 80% of people are aware of their infection, probably half of those with hepatitis C are not aware. And so a testing strategy is really needed to identify those people that are infected. And there's no question that the burden of disease related to hepatitis C is substantial. There is no shortage of overwhelming statistics to show how much of an impact hepatitis C is going to have on the health of the individual and the health of the population of those that are infected. So I'll just run through some of these bullet points. Cirrhosis is a consequence of long-term hepatitis C, and it develops in about 20% of those who are chronically infected over 20 to 30 years. Patients can reach decompensated cirrhosis, where you have a high risk of mortality from some of the really bad health consequences of cirrhosis, and that includes ruptured esophageal varices, bacterial peritonitis, hepatorenal syndrome and renal failure, and hepatic encephalopathy. Hepatocellular carcinoma is one of the fastest growing cancers in the United States, and the vast majority of these, 76%, are associated with chronic hepatitis C infection, and this is a cancer that is extremely difficult to treat. It's felt that once people reach cirrhosis, there's about a 4% annual incidence of hepatocellular carcinoma. Liver transplantation, an extremely involved and costly intervention. Hepatitis C is responsible for more than half of the liver transplants worldwide. And then, of course, hepatitis C mortality is estimated at about 16,000 deaths per year, and it's likely to peak pretty soon. Many authors feel that the burden of liver disease is expected to triple in the next 10 to 20 years. But it's also a unique window of opportunity because the field of hepatitis C therapeutics has made incredible advances just in the last few years. You can see in this chart here the timeline from 1986 all the way to about 2011. The sustained virologic response rate for the available hepatitis C treatments at the time really was not very good. And you can see at the beginning here with interferon-based therapies, 6 to 12 months of therapy would only give a cure rate or an sustained virologic response rate of 6 to 16%. Things have gotten better really since then. You can see with interferon and ribavirin being used together, getting up to about 42%. Pegylated interferon was another advance, which allowed giving injections just once a week. And then pegylated interferon and ribavirin, which really has been the standard of care for 10 years, from 2002 until 2011, only gave us 55% sustained virologic response rates. There were two new Hep C protease inhibitors approved recently, and these have inspired some new hope about sustained virologic response rates and how they're likely to increase over the next few years to about 70%. And the pipeline of additional new agents is incredible. 20 to 30 new agents being studied right now, which are called directly acting antivirals, or DAAs. And it's felt that in the future, some think as soon as 2014, that a regimen of multiple DAAs taken for just 3 months will be able to cure 90% of people with hepatitis C, a very unique opportunity to make a huge impact on this disease. Now let's get into the rationale for birth cohort screening. This is probably the most important slide that I'm going to show you, and it's really the backbone of why the CDC added this birth cohort testing recommendation to the 2012 guidelines. So what you see here is the hepatitis C virus prevalence based on two different studies from what's called the NHANES survey, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which is a very large survey, and it's one of the ways that the CDC and other organizations gain data about what are the most important chronic health problems among our population. So the NHANES survey involved giving questionnaires and drawing blood just from random samples of the population to be representative of the entire United States. There were some groups that were probably underrepresented in this survey, including homeless individuals and those institutionalized or incarcerated. So this actually may be even an underestimate of hepatitis C prevalence. But what you can see in the blue is one of the first NHANES surveys between 1988 and 1994. And then in the purple, the second one, 1999 to 2002, and there is a big bubble here, a big bump in the middle, according to year of birth. You can see here I've highlighted the birth cohort born between 1945 and 1965, and this so-called baby boomer cohort is felt to be responsible for the vast majority of hepatitis C in our country. Some estimates are that as many as 60 to 70% of the hepatitis C in our country occurs within this birth cohort. When the expert panels and the evidence reviews were going on, the CDC in terms of coming up with these new guidelines, this really jumped out as a characteristic that would really allow targeted testing in a population with relatively high prevalence of hepatitis C virus. And so as I've shown you, hepatitis C is a major current and future health problem in the United States. Testing can identify people before the onset of severe hepatitis C-related disease. There's a long latent period. Hepatitis C infection can be cured with treatment, and the chances of that are just getting better and better. We're going to be up to between 70 and 90% chance of cure, which dramatically alters the natural history of hepatitis C-associated morbidity. As I showed on the last slide, the bulk of hepatitis C is involving people that were born between 1945 and 1965, the so-called baby boomer cohort. And very importantly, about half the people with hepatitis C currently remain unaware of their hepatitis C status. Let me get into now the goals and projected impact of birth cohort screening. So clearly the end goal would be to identify everybody with hepatitis C and to treat them, and as a result of treating and curing them, to improve survival, improve their quality of life, and eventually prevent new hepatitis C virus infections. And unlike other chronic viral infections such as HIV, hepatitis C can be cured. There is not a real latent reservoir. And so there are some projections of actually the end of the hepatitis C epidemic if we're able to identify and treat enough people. But it's understandable that a lot of primary care physicians and a lot of providers are not going to be the ones treating hepatitis C. And yet there still is a real amazing impact that we can make in people living with hepatitis C, based on advising them how to prevent new infections, based on a couple of simple things that can be involved in post-test counseling to improve their quality of life. And then a very important lesson that we've learned from the HIV epidemic is that people will need to be linked to care appropriately to those that can provide care for their hepatitis C. Of course, none of this can happen without proper HCV diagnosis. And HCV diagnosis is not going to happen if we do not have aggressive HCV testing. So here are the CDC recommendations from 2012 regarding what to do with post-test counseling. And I know for a busy primary care physician, the last thing we want to have to worry about is a whole nother set of counseling that we have to do. But these are some pretty simple things that can make a huge impact for the patient living with hepatitis C. The first is when you identified somebody with hepatitis C, you should refer to somebody who can treat them or obtain advice on how to care for them. And this can be either an experienced primary care provider or a specialist such as a hepatologist, a gastroenterologist, or an infectious disease specialist. Secondly, we need to educate patients living with hepatitis C on how to protect their livers from further harm. There's some very easy things you can do in the primary care setting, such as immunizing against hepatitis A and hepatitis B, performing a brief alcohol screening and intervention, advising patients that there really is no safe level of alcohol that they can consume. And thirdly, limiting exposure to hepatic toxic drugs such as acetaminophen, and the rule of thumb is typically 2 grams of acetaminophen or less per day is what's felt to be safe. Thirdly, if a patient happens to be obese with a BMI above 25, we'd want to advise them to diet and try to lose weight, because hepatitis C, in addition to steatohepatitis or non-alcoholic steatohepatitis or fatty liver disease, can be a difficult combination, and they can be somewhat synergistic in causing ongoing liver damage. And finally, we want to advise people on how to decrease the risk of transmitting to others. We want to tell them not to donate blood, tissue, or semen. Of course, they'll probably be screened these days for those types of things. And then we want to advise them any activity or any device that might involve sharing of even microscopic amounts of blood, such as razors, toothbrushes, or nail clippers, should not be shared with other individuals. Now let's get into one of the larger mathematical models that's been projected. And these are using all kinds of assumptions about the prevalence of hepatitis C and what's going to happen if we are allowed to identify everybody, if we're able to treat them and to cure them. This is a study by Ryan et al. Published in the Annals of Internal Medicine in 2012. And what you can see across the x-axis are the major complications related to hepatitis C, starting with cirrhosis, and then hepatocellular carcinoma, liver transplants, and deaths. And what's projected is that the clinical outcomes will be much better if we allow birth cohort screening, as well as treating those people that are identified with pegylated interferon ribavirin and direct-acting antivirals. As you can see, really a large drop. These bars are large numbers, going from, for example, almost 1 million individuals with compensated cirrhosis down to 791,000. And on the next slide, I'm going to show you the impact that this could potentially have. So what you see here is, using these same categories of compensated cirrhosis, decompensated cirrhosis, hepatocellular carcinoma, liver transplants, and HCV-related deaths, the impact of birth cohort screening, identification of those that are positive, and then treating them so that they're cured is tremendous. We're talking about being able to avert over 100,000 hepatitis C-related deaths, over 200,000 episodes of compensated cirrhosis, almost 50,000 episodes of hepatocellular carcinoma, and nearly 15,000 liver transplants. So when you put this all together and you run the numbers in terms of the cost effectiveness of HCV birth cohort testing, HCV screening, as shown here in two separate purple bars, depending on whether we're talking about pegylated interferon ribavirin on the second one, or on the fourth one, we're talking about direct acting antivirals. The cost effectiveness of this screening program, and here the unit that we're using is cost per quality adjusted life year, is really on par with a lot of the other screening interventions that we've been using for a long time in primary care. And you can see here that colorectal cancer screening would cost $11,000 per quality adjusted life year, all the way up to breast cancer screening at above age 40, which would cost about $49,000 per quality adjusted life year. HIV screening is on there as well, hypertension screening, and hep C screening, depending on how the numbers look, depending on how the assumptions are with how much it's going to cost to treat everybody, is really on par with acceptable screening interventions at this point. So I'm going to summarize here. The CDC birth cohort testing recommendations, just published in 2012, suggest that we perform a one-time hepatitis C test for all people born between 1945 and 1965, and hopefully I've shown you the data and the rationale for why that was chosen. This is not meant to replace the 1998 guidelines to perform risk-based screening. It's meant to supplement it, so we should continue to perform risk-based screening for those that have injection drug use or exposures, as I mentioned. There is a sound rationale that exists for birth cohort screening, and there's really a potential for an enormous impact of birth cohort testing on diagnosing and treating those that have chronic hepatitis C virus infection.